Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and my guests today are Orville McDonald. Hi, Orville.
Hi, Robert.
And Dimitri Lilin. Hey, Dimitri. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
And I asked these guys to come on to show us Visual Studio 2012 Update 2. It is a very excellent day around here because new bits have shipped. I love new bits shipping day.
Yeah.
I love it when new bits appear.
We get excited about that. You know, it's all about put in the hard work, see the product go out,
exactly.
And just watch people enjoy it.
So we did update one a few months back, and we are now on update two. We had said that we were going to do periodic, frequent updates, and we are.
Yes, yeah, this is really just kind of a continuation of that story, right? One thing you could imagine, we have a lot of engineers. They're very excited and passionate about the work they do. And it's historically been the situation where it's like, you know, you build a bunch of great functionality, and you sit on it, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait. And then it's like, oh, the train's here. Hop on the train, send everything out, big wave of excitement. Right. But what we decided to do now is really release kind of more continuously. And in the case with Update 2, really focusing on kind of like how do we help development teams get a lot better. So a lot of our innovation really focused kind of on four key areas. One of them being agile planning. Mm-hmm. We always had the view that kind of a lot of people take agile and they assume it means only one thing. Well, in the case of Visual Studio, we say, do Agile your way. So we've added some new functionality, which we'll demo that. We have improvements to quality enablement, helping your tests run a lot better, making tests more integrated with your teamwork. Mm-hmm. Also, a line of business development for those people who are developing for SharePoint or for their organizations. A lot of great things there. And then, of course, at the end of the day, we always love developers.
Of course.
So a lot of hotness in the developer experience as well.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And the one thing I'd like to remind folks is that this is continuous, right? So if you have update one and you get update two, that's great. But if you missed update one and you get update two, you get everything that came in update one. We have a cumulative model. It's not going to leave anything behind. In fact, update two even rolls in the web tools update two into it as well. So if you miss that, you have everything you need.
Mm. Cool. And then, of course, there's no doubt bug fixes and other...
Yes, and we keep those going as well. Right. A lot of people in the past were more familiar with the service pack model, where it was primarily bug fixes. What we've done is we've taken it to the next level of saying, not only do you get your bug fixes, but we're going to give you some extra goodness as well.
Right. Yeah. Awesome. Cool.
Yep.
Let's see.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into it.
Yeah, do some demos. So we're going to start off by talking about, you know, a lot of things today, but really focus in the beginning on the agile planning tool. So I have a demo here. What I did was, you know, I took a virtual machine and I put update 2 on it. I have, you know, TFS 2012 RTM initially, but CTP4 has pretty much everything we need to get going. And the virtual machine is running behind the scenes here. We can just use my laptop as if we have a server somewhere out there. So it's pretty cool. For agile planning, everything starts off in the web interface. You know, we focused a lot on update one, update two to add capabilities there. And the first thing that I want to talk about is the enhancements that we made to the Kanban board. Folks are probably familiar to hear the word board, right, in our web access interface. We've had a board, I'll show it right here, for a while now called the task board. Mm-hmm. This is the board right next to the backlog, where you have backlog items, and then you have tasks, and you have a progression of these items, you know, from different states, where you can turn on team member view as such. This is what we traditionally have had. And update one added a second board. It's just called board, but really it's the Kanban board. So if you go back to work, click on the work right here, you will see that there's a second board under product backlog. So the first one was up here, second mm-hmm. was down here. If you missed it, guys, be sure to check it out. When you click on that, you get a similar looking board, but this board is the Kanban board. And Kanban is not as much about sort of your states of like, you know, is it new or is it in progress or is it finished? It's more about a workflow. What is the workflow of your organization? Some organizations have very simple workflows. Others might have more complex ones like, hey, you've identified a new item and now you want to see if there's a return on investment on the item. So it has to go through all this process and then it gets approved and then somebody gets assigned. So this isn't really states the way we think about it from the other board, but this is your organizational, your team workflow. So that's what Kanban is. It's been there since update one. Update two adds something very cool. And we've heard, you know, customers saying this is what they want. We've delivered on it. Customization of columns. What good is a process, a workflow, if you can't customize it? Every organization is different. You know, we at Microsoft do it one way. When I build my little apps on the side, I have a different process. So we've allowed you to change the columns. You click on this new button, which wasn't there before, called Customize Columns. And it brings up a view of, all right, here's the default columns that are in there. The default are new. approved and committed, but I've gone ahead and added two more columns. I've added, you know, imaginary columns for my company here, my imaginary, you know, coffee company that we're demoing. So ROI investigation and manager approval. And, you know, maybe I made a mistake when I originally set this up. Maybe the order is wrong. I can go ahead and change the order. These little arrows on the bottom allow you to shift order. You can also say, well, by the time it gets to ROI investigation, it's actually approved, you know, from a work item perspective. Well, the workflow says something, whatever you call it, like ROI investigation. But in reality, in TFS, your item, your backlog item, is now in a certain state. Mm-hmm. So it might be an approved state. Folks that follow this kind of approach to software development will see that being able to customize this is awesome. I think it makes it usable for a lot of folks, a lot more than it was before. And also, you have the ability to customize the maximum sort of weight before you get warnings from a column. So one of the swim lanes, columns, might have a certain level of items that it can have. Let's put this back so the way it was before. And notice the one over here. One means as soon as you have one item, you're filled. Maybe you have one person who can only handle one thing at a time. And that's probably not the best way to do things, but reality is reality. And that's your weight, or maybe it's two, right? Maybe you have up to two items in this stage of your organization. So we'll set it to two, hit OK. This updates. And now you can see that there's a 2 and a 5 here, right on the right. That's the maximum weight with no items in ROI. So if I move, you know, drag and drop, very, very friendly, I've hit my maximum weight. If I put a third one in there, now I have three items, the top will go red. Okay. It's not going to prevent you from adding more items, but, you know, what I'm showing here isn't like new to update 2. We've always had weight, but now you can customize it as part of the process. So you can mm-hmm. add columns and customize their weight. That's kind of cool. So yeah, there's a lot in there. The next thing that I want to point out is, for anybody that have used the Kanban board, you know, today we're obviously not training people how to use Kanban, but just to show some of the functionality. If you have been using Kanban, it's worth saying that when you have, I'll go back to customize columns. When you have states that you've configured, when those states change, that's when your work item gets updated, and you can actually see that. So as I move something from new to approved, as I did with a few items, if I go in here and say, well, fix is now approved, if I scroll down to history, scroll a little bit more, I apologize for my resolution, you could see that a few seconds ago, Dimitri changed the state from new to approved. So there is tracking, as long as the state behind the scenes change, but just moving it between columns isn't going to change it unless the state changes along with it. So that's kind of how it's done. I think this makes it very, very usable for folks. The next thing that I want to show, part of Agile Planning, I'll go back to the Work Hub, is we've added the ability to tag items. Customers have said, look, we appreciate it. We can customize on-premise TFS a lot, and we can make work items whatever we want from a process template perspective. We've certainly, on the service side, have not allowed that. But regardless, people all over the place have asked, let's give us another mechanism by way which we can tag data. And so that's what we did. We added tag support to the system. Tags are very cool. I'm cheating a little bit here, but let me go back to kind of what the screen looked like before I made some changes to it. So this is more of the traditional view, where you have your backlog items list, and you have a bunch of items that are in the backlog. Some are bugs, some are, you know, work items, whatever. And you can go in here now, and when you open the item, at the top you have a tags column. The tags column allows you to add tags. So here I've added a bunch of tags already. I've said this is a deployment item. It's one of my Dimitri's favorite. It's also a Windows Phone item. I can go ahead and click Add, and I can see other tags that I've used previously, or I can type in my own. So this is also Robert's favorite, right? So Robert really likes fixing exceptions caused by local
Absolutely.
Storage.
It's what you do in your free time, isn't it, Robert?
You bet.
Yeah, he's all over the exceptions.
I love it so much, I'll often cause them so I can go fix them.
Yeah. So we've got the ability to tag and also remove a tag, like, oh, this was a mistake. It was never a deployment item. Hit save and close, and now the item has tags on it. Mm-hmm. What I like to do personally, and that's what I was saying, I kind of cheated before, is I actually like to go into the column options view here, and I like to scroll down and add the tag, make that visible. So I can go ahead and say, okay, tags is part of selected columns, hit OK. this resolution is really terrible here, but here we can mm-hmm. see the tags. So it makes it kind of easier to visualize what tags are out there. But this wouldn't be very useful if you couldn't also filter the items by it. So what we've added is a filter button in the top right. I have it highlighted there. When you click on the filter button, it shows you all the tags in your system. This all, it looks like a tag, but it's not really a tag. It means kind of reset. So on the right, you can choose tags by which to filter the query on your screen. So you can say, you know what, I just want to see the three, and see it actually shows you how many items are tagged with this tag. I can say Windows Phone, and my query refreshes, I just see Windows Phone. Now, they might have multiple tags on them, but if they have Windows Phone, mm-hmm. the query shows that it's a very nice way to filter through data. I mean, I know it from my own life. I use TFS for building Windows Phone apps. You know, it's usually just me. Sometimes I have my friends help me out or colleagues. And it's really nice to be able to say, we have this large laundry list, but let me organize it a little bit differently. I think it's nice. Kind of cool. The other kind of part of tagging that I want to point out is tags don't just apply to backlog or bug. You can add them to tasks. You can add them to test cases. We'll show you some of that later. So they're very flexible. They're all over the system now. And again, it's kind of very easy to use in the web interface there.
All right. Very
cool. All right, so let's move on to the next one. And for those in the audience, I am cheating with my service. I have some cliff notes here. And there's so much to show. I don't want to miss anything. I'm just excited for you guys. So I want to make sure we get it all. So let me reset this view real quick. So I'll hide the filtering. Another feature that folks have asked from the Agile planning perspective is it's great to have this kind of backlog of view like we have here of all these items. It's great to be able to say, well, show me what's in Sprint 1, for example, et cetera. But you sometimes want to pull it out of there, and you want to send an email. I mean, we all try to avoid email. You know, we try to say email is not our friend, but, you know, there's good reasons for it. You might want to take a sprint, put some comments in, and send it to somebody who's a stakeholder. Maybe they don't really go into TFS too much or whatever. So we've made it right from the web interface really easy. So let's say I want to send my whole backlog here. We've added a little button. It looks like an email icon. Pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. As long as you've turned email on TFS server, when I was setting up my dummy Hyper-V one, I forgot, so I was like, oh, error, you know, no email set up. But once you get it set up properly, which, you know, I've always had working in my organizations in the past, you click on the email and you get this pop-up. The pop-up takes the query that we had there, populates it right in here. Now, it's worth saying you can't, you know, you see, actually, never mind, I lied, you could change this stuff. For some reason, it wasn't working before, but certainly, for the most part, I wouldn't want to change this. You know, this is reflective of what it actually is, right? This is what it currently is in my view. Mm-hmm. Unless I see a glaring typo, I'm not going to change it. But I could add some comment, and it's nice.
Yeah, one other thing about this that probably a lot of your viewers would be interested in is that even within Microsoft, when we spend a lot of time kind of planning releases and going through kind of all the different work items, this feature gets used actually quite a bit. I can't mention how many times I open my mail and I could see the query and I could see everything that's applicable to me, and then I just go and work on my work items. And it's one of those things that just saves a lot of time. As Dimitri says, you know, we'd rather be heads down and do work instead of doing email. But if I'm going to get an email, I'd rather be concisely captured just like this. So it's actually a pretty cool feature.
Yeah. Another nice thing to point out here, something I didn't realize till I was just staring at it with you guys, is that it pulls in the columns exactly how you have it defined, which, you know, makes sense. It pulls in the current view. So because I've added tags, the tags are visible as well. Mm-hmm. So that makes it great, and I'm sure this could be probably imported into Excel, but hey, Excel integration is probably better right from, you know, Visual Studio when you export that. To me, has really always been nice. So to kind of finalize this, you can pick some person from your organization to send, somebody who already has TFS access, and you can hit send, and it sends it off to them. I'm just not gonna bother with that portion right now. All right. So the next thing we want to jump into is, you know, we've kind of talked about agile planning. Three great features. I mean, there's a lot in this release, right? We're not going to cover every little bug, every little feature. We're trying to show highlights. But the next big thing in here from agile, after agile planning, is the test, management and execution. And Orville's going to do a demo for us.
Okay. I'll show that. So one thing we hear a lot of is that traditionally when people thought of development, they really just thought about the developers who are heads down, they're writing code. But we know that bringing great software to the world requires a lot of people, right? Not just the people writing the code, but also the people who run the tests and make sure that the quality is kind of really up to par. Mm-hmm. Well, one cool thing that you'll notice with Visual Studio Update 2, Visual Studio 2012 Update 2, is this new test hub feature, right? So we go and we click on the test hub, and everything you need to run your test is all kind of in this one location. And not only is it in this one location, but it's now available through the web access portal, which it wasn't previously. So if you take a look at my screen here, you'll see that I have a list of kind of my test suites. Mm-hmm. But in addition to the test suites, I also have a bunch of test cases, right? And with those test cases, I have a few options. So I could go through and I could run them. I could mark them as like passing or failing. Some of them might be blocking. So I could change the outcome of them kind of directly here through my mini toolbar. I could actually then also go and create new test cases. So you could do test case authoring. So that way, you don't always have to have kind of like your test manager, Microsoft Test Manager with you. You could just go through and do it through the web portal.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of developers didn't even see this too much, right? You're in Visual Studio, you're not used to having your run button for tests as much. You're kind of just, I mean, you're thinking maybe unit tests, right? But this is manual testing. This allows you to go through a set of steps, make sure things are working correctly. And it exposes, I think, this just to more people, right? It's a lot more accessible going to web than even if you're, let's say, a dev and you want to help out or something. You don't have to install anything. This is just right there for you.
Exactly. So I'm going to go through and I'm going to click on the first test case here, so test case number 26. As I go through it, a few things I want to highlight. You'll notice here that I have actually the list of steps kind of already highlighted. I could go through and I could go and add another step. So demo at toolbox. Because, you know, we always have to save the hotness for you, Robert, so we always have to bring it in over here. So we'll just go and save and close that one. So now that I have updated the test case, I actually want to go and run it. So I'm going to click run. You can see it launches here. And as I go through my tests, right in place, I could actually say whether a test passed.
Yeah, whether it's, you know, a step get completed or not. Just think about how awesome this is, right? You don't have to have anything installed, and you can do this. You can have side by side. You can have anything, a Windows 8 app, a Windows Phone app. You could be running this on the Mac testing a Safari-based website or something. It doesn't depend on Visual Studio or MTM being installed.
Right. And then even in the last step, let's say theoretically that the demo at Toolbox failed, right? Thankfully, it hasn't. The demo gremlins have been good
down.
To us.
Oh, no.
I say this as you're up next.
Yeah, next. I knew we could count on you.
Yeah. So I'm just going to add a comment, and I'm going to say, just kidding. So you can add that kind of right in place. Other things that I could do, too, is I could actually create bugs, right? So we could say, this failed. I need to share this with my development team so they could then go and take action. Well, right in place, I could go and select create a bug. Everything I need to do to fill out the bug information is there. But the added bonus, and this is kind of the real time saver, is in the past I'd have to go and write out all my steps so people could repro it. Well, here you see that all my steps are automatically included within the bug, right?
Yep, comment and all.
Yeah, comment and everything. You can see here. Just kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Too bad we missed April Fool's, but yeah, this would have been good for that day. But it's all there. So that way.
There is an update, too. This isn't April Fool's.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. There is an update.
Just making sure.
There is an update,
too. Don't scare me, guys.
So the great thing is that I'm now able to run through my test cases faster because I spend less time in documentation. So it's a real productivity gain, and then the developers have all the information they need, so it becomes something beautiful for the team all across the board.
Cool.
And this is, once again, kind of all within the test hub for people to use.
Yeah. You know, a couple of things just to point out real quick. One of the things you have to keep in mind, though, you still need Microsoft Test Manager to create the plan and the suites. Once you get to the test, there you go. As long as you have a full license, Cal and TFS, you have access to this test hub, and just look how rich this thing is. We just scratched the surface. There's other features we could show, but in the interest of time.
Yeah. So this just means you don't need the Test Manager client running on your machine. You can just go to this website.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
The client has some advantages. You know, the client is very rich. I don't want to undersell the client. It's an awesome tool. It has the ability to do some recording as well through it. So there's certainly reasons why you would want to use the client. But there's so many times when this is just sufficient, right? If you're just testing a website, something basic, or when you have a restriction, you want to test it on an operating system or an environment where you can't have the tool. There you go. This is your answer. And as with everything else, you know, we've shown that we've delivered this major functionality in an update. So just think about the future. It's bright. I think we'll see a lot of this stuff get just better and better. At least that's my hope.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. So that's the test hub. So we'll skip over to the next demo. So as part of kind of the testing theme here, I want to talk about unit testing. We've, you know, at Microsoft long been advocates of unit testing, and I would say that I'm a very guilty party. I don't do enough testing in any of my life, you know. I always wish we had more time and to put more testing in, but unit tests are just critical if you want quality. I've been burned before by little changes. Oh, I'll just tweak this little thing and my app doesn't work, because if I had a unit test, it says that isolated unit of code, I'd be good to go.
Yeah, like everybody always says, it doesn't need testing. It's only a single line code change.
Right.
Yeah, what can go wrong, right?
What can go wrong?
Check it in.
Blow things up.
Put a comment. You look like you did your job. But yeah, we certainly want to emphasize that TDD is a good practice, and Windows Phone has been missing a tooling story around TDD. So with this update too, we finally added unit test support to Windows Phone 8 development specifically. And I want to show that to you guys right now. Bring up my project. Kind of in the interest of time, I didn't want to bore everybody with me creating projects and writing code and tests and such. But this is a very, very simulated, very, very basic application. I just have in my solution, I have a project here, which is a Windows Phone app. The Windows Phone app just has a couple of buttons and services. I'll show you that in a second. There's also the brand new unit test project, and there's a portable class library. Now, the way that I added the unit test project, like let's say this is a real application of yours and you want to add unit tests, the way you would do that is you just go to File, New Project, or, well, let's do it for real, right? Right-click, add a new project to this solution, and if you search for phone test, that should do it for me. There you go. I just don't have VB.NET installed. That's why VB.NET is missing. But C#, C++, and I hope I'm not screwing this up, VB.NET, I believe, are all supported here. At least these two are for sure. And these are brand new project types you just wouldn't have had before. So C# in my case was the one that I added. It's already there, so I'm not going to do that. But once I added the project, it's just kind of like a standard unit test project that you're used to. I'll actually go ahead and I'll open up a test class. Let's make this visible to everybody. If you know anything about unit testing in our environment, you're very used to seeing the attribute test class, the attribute test method, seeing some code, seeing an assert that says whether something failed or succeeded. So here I've just dummied up some tests against some dummy classes. Everything is dummy, but it should do the job. Now, in the properties of this project, let's go into properties. So I'm going to properties of my unit test project specifically. You'll see something interesting. When you go into properties, there's under the debug menu, which is where we are now, there's a target device. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about this a little bit. The unit test project is dependent on the emulator or a physical device to run your unit tests. In fact, let me show how that works. I'm going to leave the emulator because I don't have a device connected. And I'm just going to go to my Test Explorer, which is something that we added in 2012. And I'm going to say run all tests. Now, pay attention to the Windows Phone emulator on my right. Let's run all tests. You'll see something there in a second. So here I am running the tests. Oh, some kind of little app just popped up and closed. That was the app that Microsoft built that runs your unit tests. Mm-hmm. Now, why are we in the emulator? Why are we in a device? Why can't this all just be simulated? Well, I would turn that argument a little bit, and I would say we all, when we test, want the test to reflect reality as much as possible. By running the unit tests on the emulator, which is the virtual machine of the operating system, so it's very much a copy of what it is in real life, or by on the device, by being really on the metal, you're ensuring that the unit test quality will be very high from the platform perspective. The platform won't fail you because something gets simulated differently, like the sensor API for the camera API or something you're accessing. You have access to all of that within unit test, and you have it in a real way and in a reliable way because of that linkage. So I think, some people might say, hey, I wish this was all simulated and the emulator wasn't needed. I would say, I'm glad it's there. And I would also say that the very nice capability of using the IDE is one thing, but there's also command line capability. I'm not going to show that now. I don't want to show people command line boxes. This is not that kind of show. But it does work, so you could automate it with command line. You can automate it from continuous kind of builds, continuous unit tests. You can integrate it just by running specific unit
cool.
tests over here.
Very cool.
Yeah. So let's actually run through some of the tests. Let me show you how this stuff is wired up. In my references, I want to point out that I have two projects that the unit test project references. The unit test project references the Windows Phone app itself, like the actual app that I can run, and the portable class library where I put some logic that I want to share, maybe like with a Silverlight app or a Windows Phone app, another Windows Phone app or Windows 8. I mean, there's all sorts of possibilities there. And that's very powerful to me. That was like one of the first questions I had when I saw this thing coming out. You know, internally, I like got the bits. I got all excited. I'm a Windows Phone developer. I get giddy when I see something in Windows Phone. So I'm like, oh, this is cool. And then I'm like, oh, I hope I can test my real app. I cheated. I didn't do a very good job with some of my apps. I mean, they're nice apps, but my code is one big zap file, one big project. I don't have it. I've split up all over the place. So being able to reference the actual app and then call code in it is awesome, right? Let's actually take a look at some of that in real time. So here on the left are all the test cases that I just ran, all the unit tests, and they all passed. So they're all organized by passed state. And I'm going to go in. I'm going to fail one of them. Let's add some Dimitri code, as I like to call it. So this is, you know, one big simulation. You'll see why it's so elaborate eventually, but it's all very simple. I'm just going to throw an exception. So some strange error is going to start happening. I'm going to do a quick rebuild. Let's get this thing, make sure everything is good. All right, everything is rebuilt. I'm going to run all and see if the tests continue to pass. Well, the organization on the left changed. Now we have four in the passed state, but we have one with a big X on it. This test has failed. If we click on the test, we can actually see in detail the exception true, and it said some strange error occurred, so you know something bad is happening here. Mm-hmm. And you probably want to debug it. You probably want to say, well, what's actually happening in the code? So the traditional way it's existed in unit tests for a while is you right-click on something and you say debug the selected test. This isn't new for update 2, but it exists for Windows Phone. So when you do that, it's going to launch and it's going to hopefully hit a breakpoint right there. Yep, there you go. There's the exception.
Okay.
And this is where I want to segue slightly into a related topic. One of the other cool updates in Update 2, something that also came out as a part of Update 1 originally, but Update 2 enhances, is this whole notion of CodeMap. CodeMap is a visualizer of code. You're able to take a bunch of method calls, string them up visually, easier to kind of show it. If you've never seen it, I ignored this feature, I'll just being honest, right? When Update 1 came out, I looked at it, I didn't spend a lot of time with it. When I started spending time with it, I use it all the time now. It's just like, oh, wow, I never had this feature before. How did I live? So the Update 2 feature for folks that have been using it is now that it's finally integrated with the debugging experience. You can click the CodeMap button. It's in the Debug Tools window. So if you're, right-click on my menu here, which isn't, there you go. So I have Debug on. That's why I see the toolbar. If you click on CodeMap, you can actually get a code map, which is this visual representation of how we got here. There was a test method, right? And if you highlight it, you get more information. So here it says this is a public void. Then it called into another public void. Then, it called into another public void that takes an operation type in. You don't see the parameters, but at least you see kind of what the signatures are. You can always double-click. It goes straight to the line of code. So it's code-linked, right, in real time. And you could see this little yellow icon is saying this is where the breakpoint is, right? This is where it hit because of the exception. So you're like, okay, as a developer, right? All right, let's see what happens. I'm going to leave my code map open. I'm going to just make this smaller here. And I'm going to fix the error. Oh, and I'm going to change one more line of code and save. What can go wrong, right? So here I'm simulating the common thing. I fix one thing, break another. How many times have we done that as developers? So now I think I'm the best guy ever. I maybe even checked in my code and told my manager I'm done. And then I decide to rebuild and run unit tests. Why not, right? So before we had the load method fail, but now the save will. So I'm going to run unit test. Unit test is going to say, congratulations, you've broken something new. So now save data is breaking, and I'm like, I can't believe I did that, right? So I'm going to right-click on it, and I'm going to debug this and see why I was silly. And this is where CodeMap gets even more interesting. Let's hit the breakpoint, and I'll show you guys why. And there you go. The CodeMap actually got updated. So I didn't have to do anything, right? I just left it open. By leaving it open, the second call stack got added to the first one. So the first one was load test. This one is save test. So you can see there's a difference. And then there's a difference here. But then you hit a common point.
Okay.
This is so valuable. Like when you're debugging complex code, to find common areas of code sometimes could be half the battle. You know, you're thinking, well, my unit test might be failing. My real app might be working. You know, that happens too sometimes, right? Run both. Run your app, hit no error, then run this thing, you can hit a breakpoint and pull this up. It doesn't have to be an exception, right? So you can put a breakpoint somewhere, run to that point, stop your app, go to unit test, hit the exception, see which paths both ways took. Mm-hmm. And you might see, oh, they're not going down the same path. Or they are, but, oh, there's a parameter there. Parameter must be different. Something changed.
And the awesome thing with this, too, is the times where I get into what I call the whack-a-mole situation, which is like you fix one bug, and fixing that bug now exposes another bug. Now you could see that, oh, well, actually storage helper might be where the problem actually is. So I could actually now go to the root cause as opposed to fixing the symptoms and actually get everything addressed. So it's actually an unbelievably amazing feature. I'm obviously really excited about it, and I'm sure Dimitri and now you are too, Robert.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're scratching the surface. This tool has so many options. We can probably do two shows just on it, and we should in the future. It's a great topic to explore. It's available to anybody who, you know, has premium or above, and I highly, highly recommend it. So,
and this was the debugger canvas in a previous life, right? Is it the same feature?
We had some kind of internal labs project. Right. I think it was actually publicly available. I used it, so I do remember what you're talking about. Yeah, I would say there's got to be a history. They look too similar. I didn't ask, though. That's a good question. I should ask. I know the guy who's working on this. All right. So a couple of things I want to point out. This unit test project, right, so the project we have here that looks just like any other C-sharp project, but it is a Windows Phone project, right, because it connects to an emulator, you can't run that directly. That's not the point. Like, if you set, you know, a startup and hit F5 for emulator, it's going to give you some message. It's designed to be run through the Test Explorer, right? So that's the way you guys should use it. And I just want to point that out before we sort of wrap up this subject here. Now, from the Test Explorer, we've also made some improvements. The Test Explorer right here, I'm a big fan. I think it's such a nice way to sort of organize all your unit tests. I mean, this just didn't exist before, right? I mean, it's a brand new panel in 2012, so it's exciting. But one of the things that folks have asked for that we didn't have before was, all right, you guys have ways to group your tests. So if you right-click, so just not to be too fast here. If I go to the panel that lists all the tests, whether they failed or passed, and I right-click somewhere, it doesn't matter where, and I go to Group By, I get a list of options. The new option in Update 2 is this class. So when you click on class, you can filter your unit tests by the class that they're in, which can be very, very useful. You can very quickly visualize, all right, common RSS feed is passing, local storage has some errors. It's just an easier way. It's like a small thing, but I actually keep this view on all the time. I mean, state is one thing. I don't have enough unit tests for state to be like the narrow filter that I need. I'd rather see all my classes and see kind of where there's a pattern of failure or such. So I think that's a very nice, it's like a small thing, but a very nice thing. Another feature they added was this concept of playlists. You have this new button up here. It has a drop-down. I've already created a playlist. By default, you would just say all tests. But I've already created a playlist that I didn't name very, very verbosely, a playlist test one. But I'll show you guys how to create a new one to begin with. So let's say I want to test I want to run a couple of unit tests together, right? So let's say I want to run the save and load. I don't care about any of the other ones. When you right-click, you now get under the group by a new option called Add to Playlist. And you can either add it to an existing one or you can add it to a new one. I'll do new. And then it asks you, where do you want to save it? So I'll say Dimitri's, if I can spell my own name, to tests, hit save. Nothing changed because you haven't yet selected to filter by that list. But if you go to the drop-down, it now has an additional one. Click on that.
Okay, very nice.
There you go. So small thing. There's also on the ALM blog, if folks go check it out, there's a tool out there to convert some of the older kind of lists that Visual Studio 2010 had to this new format, so you can convert and import into the new playlist feature. So certainly, it's just an XML file. I'm sure folks will find very fun, creative things to create test lists with. One thing to point out is that the test list isn't checked into source control. It's not part of your project. We just saved the file.
Okay.
Because it was saved on your machine, we're doing kind of a nice thing for you. We're adding it to the dropdown, to this dropdown here. So these two XML files are in my project. So you might want to think about that. Do you want to share them with others? You might have to send it out or add it to source. I'm not sure what the right sort of way of doing it is, but it certainly makes sense. You don't want to mess like 100 different playlists that's good for you, but maybe Orville doesn't care.
Sure.
Or it's, he might not need it. Same thing with CodeMap. That CodeMap that we saw open, it's a file. it's a file you can save. You can add some comments. We didn't show because we're not doing a full demo, but it's very cool. You can actually send it to somebody and say, here's the three paths my code took. Here's some comments on what I think happened. You guys take a look at it. But it doesn't add it to source control automatically. So if you've generated them and they're valuable, save them. That's all I want to say as a tip. All right, so we've gone through debugger integration, just making sure we don't miss anything. All right, so another cool feature that we've added in update 2, and this is going to be, again, one of those like didn't exist before kind of situations. When we talk about building modern applications, you know, we talk about either JavaScript HTML for Windows Store or C#. Those are great ways to build apps. A lot of people are building the HTML JavaScript ones. One of the things we've heard from the community is they'd love more ways to debug those applications, especially from like frame rate, UI responsiveness, how does that relate to what's actually happening, what events are firing, what my CPU was doing, how do we kind of bring all the data together? Mm-hmm. So the debugging team has been working on a brand new, very exciting feature for analyzing UI responsiveness. It has a very long-winded name, UI Responsiveness Analyzer, but that really is what it is. I want to show you guys what that looks like today. So I've built a very, very dummy, and I'm going to use the word built very lightly, as in I went to file new project. I apologize. One day I'll make a better demo. But for now, I just want to show that this is just a standard JavaScript HTML application, which is the only type of application that the tool currently supports. And I now have a new way to run the app for testing UI responsiveness. Of course, I can just hit F5, run in simulator or whatever, run in device. That still works. But you can now go to debug. And JavaScript and analysis, UI responsiveness, and say launch startup project. So, or remember the shortcut, Control Alt F8. So when I do that, I don't know if you guys caught it, that was very quick. In the background, it started to collect statistics. Okay. The first time you run this, you're actually going to get a prompt from Windows. If you have UAC enabled, it's going to say, we'll allow this process collector to run as an admin. You say yes. It starts to collect in the IDE, and then you can go and let's see, where's my application? There's my application. So now I'm going to go and use it. I'm actually going to go in. I'm going to scroll around. I'm going to click on stuff. As you can see, it's just the default template. I made no changes whatsoever. Right. Okay, I'm done. Now I stopped. I might want to stop the debugger and stop collecting. So I hit the stop button. And we get this very cool. I'm going to minimize everything else just to give this thing the space it deserves, right? This is now a visual representation of a ton of useful data. And they're doing really cool things in here to actually get in there and figure out, well, pretty graphs are nice, but we want to make it useful. How do we make it useful? We can take a section and say, all right, so here it looks like my application had a really good frame rate for the most part, except for right at the start. For some reason, my app responsiveness wasn't great. And in real apps, you could see very long periods of time where frame rate kind of drops. So that's kind of the bottom bar. And on top, you can see CPU utilization. So when you look at this, you already get a sense of, something at startup is eating up my frame rate. Mm-hmm. And you can go ahead and dive deeper by selecting a portion of this, right? So the white area is not the selected area, and say zoom in. This brings you more detail. So now you have even more kind of understanding. Well, it's not over here where the frame rate dropped. There were some small spikes, but actually it was right here. And you can zoom in again. And I'll make this bottom a little bit bigger. If I can find it, that's right. This resolution sucks. It is what it is. So now here at the bottom, you can actually dive into details. And you can say, well, what was happening, right? HTML parsing was happening, CSS parsing. You can see the durations, you can see the start, you can see the thread it was running on, very rich information. You have these little red icons, which, by the way, in the top right, it tells you what those are, right? So these are the app lifecycle events.
Okay.
But if you highlight them, you can see which lifecycle stages were happening as this was occurring. I'm no way going to do this thing justice right now, but just check it out. I would say it's a great tool if you're building JavaScript HTML apps.
Cool.
For Windows Store. This is pretty awesome.
Excellent.
All right. So we've gone through, a bunch of great features. I would say, we've shown most of what's exciting, except one more category that I want to kind of end with. We all do something which is called build software. If we're watching this show, right, the odds are. And we all do one thing, generate code. We store that code, if we're, again, watching the show, hopefully, in Team Foundation server. And we're all very used to as developers. I mean, how many times have you opened Visual Studio and there's your source code explorer and you can get code from TFS or you can do comparison of files and such. So that experience has been very nice, and I've loved how Visual Studio has evolved there. But I think with this release, I can honestly say that the web interface for source control is really evolving beautifully. I would almost say, like, it's the first time I've been, like, wowed by it and just the amount of capabilities that are coming in there. So from the developer experience kind of standpoint, I want to jump back into the web portal and show you guys what that looks like as our last demo. So I'm going to open up the web page again. And I'm going to click on code. But before I do, I just want to point out that did not say code before. So if you have update 1 installed or prior, there was a source. And the source was on the right of work. So now we've renamed it to code and made it the first thing after home. Small change, but again, just like to point those things out. When you click on code, that's where kind of the adventure begins. This experience, I mean, let's say from RTM and update 1, let's say from update 1, has been nice. I mean, we've added a lot of capabilities to explore source code. But this is the first time you can do things like look at holistically what has happened in a change set or what has happened to files. Let's take a look at some of that. So for example, right-clicking on my whole source tree, I can go to view history, and I can see all the change sets that have happened. But when I click on a change set, that's where it gets really cool. I love this thing. Not only do you see that there was a particular task associated with it, you can see who checked it in. I was accidentally on my administrator account, not Dimitri, but you can see that the task was assigned to me. You see who it is. There would be a picture here if I had the picture set up. And then you can see all the source code changes. This was basically a change set where I created the dummy projects and just checked them in. That's why there's like so many files. So that's kind of cool. But let's look at a file by file change. So let's find a different change set. Let's go deeper in. So I'm going to expand out the Windows Phone app. And let's see what kind of change set we had here. We had a few. Yeah, there you go. Look at this. We have a rich side-by-side what has changed in the browser experience. So that file diff experience is right here on the web, which I think cool. is awesome. I mean, if you spend a lot of time in code, which we must because we do this for a living, I think this is freaking awesome. You also have the ability to get to this experience in different ways. Let's try to see if I can remember how to do that. Let me go in here. Let's go back to the Explorer. There's also some side-by-side stuff I'd love to show. If I can do it, I can do it. Let's take a look at view history. Show rename history, right? So you can see that things changed. Click on compare. Yeah, this is where I want it to be. So a different way to get to this is I went to the file. Right, let's do this one more time so folks, if they want to check this out, you know, they can do it. So I went to view history. And then I said compare in the top right. When I did that, it brought up an even cooler view. Like, look at this. You can see a visualization on the sidebar, like you can in Visual Studio now, of where the changes are, okay. right? Mm-hmm. You can see what the changes are. It's got full syntax highlighting. There's blue. You can also go into full screen mode. So if I hit F11, this thing could be really beautiful. You could just see nice. Quite a bit more even in this terrible resolution, which is all brand new. You also have the ability to... Let's go back here to contents. You also have the ability to see annotations. So you can see sort of which change set, who did what. So it's like a timeline view. I mean, it's not the formal name, but you can actually see all the changes that went into this file. And there's a change set links. So when you click on it, it goes right to the change set. So cool. If you're like, who changed this file for the last couple of months? Mm-hmm. You look at it, Orville, change set 5. OK, click on that. And get
and
the
again,
compare
you can
experience.
Do this all from the web. You're not inside Visual Studio.
It's freaking awesome. Any modern browser. I'm sure there's some doc somewhere for supported ones, but I've had no problems. Okay. I've tested it with a bunch just to make sure. I love to tinker, so I tinkered. So that's kind of cool. There's a lot more here. I mean, I'm really just touching a small part. I know this gets people excited. You can finally download zip files of parts of the tree fully. So if let's say... let's use this as an example. You have somebody who you want to send the source code of the app. You don't want to send them the unit test. You don't want to send them the solution. Your coworker, whatever, he's maybe not your coworker, but somebody you have to just give source code to for legal reasons to store it. You can right-click on any part of the tree. So all the way from the very top, mm-hmm. you get the download option, or on Windows Phone, right, this folder. And when you click on it, you get a almost immediately a pop-up that says, hey, here's the file downloaded, cool. And it contains all the source. It's like a small thing, but again, I love this stuff. Let's make sure I've got all the stuff in there. Yeah, so, oh, and one more thing, and this kind of impressed me, the syntax highlighting even works for other kinds of files. Let me see here if we can find a config. Of course, I don't have one handy, but you know, you get the idea. Like web config files are syntax highlighted now. It's very, very nice.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah, lots of new features. Yeah.
Lots of new features, and there's more in update too. There's the LightSwitch HTML client. There's the Office and SharePoint tooling. I know that there's separate videos on those. This is awesome stuff.
Yeah.
Awesome. A lot of great goodness. So
yeah,
we just recommend that on April 4th, everyone goes out visualstudio.com and get your hands on the bits and start playing with them.
Available for download now. By the time this goes live,
yes, that's
it
true.
It will be now.
And I want to give one more plug to something. I want to say that let's say for some reason you need a little more time before you get your hands on this update in an installed fashion, go out to tfs.visualstudio.com, our hosted TFS in the cloud. And all these features are there already. So you guys can go in there, start playing with all the web access features, the test, everything there. Or you can install it on your dev environment, production, whatever it is. This stuff is going RTM, so parallel between the cloud and on-premise, just like we promised. We're going to get you guys enabled.
Great. So that is Update 2, or many of the things in Update 2.
Yes.
Thanks, guys, for coming on and showing us. Lots of cool stuff. Mm-hmm. Go get it. Go download it. And we'll see you back here when we do update 3, hopefully.
Yeah, we'll see.
We never make any commitments of what's coming in the future, but
you got a standing invite.
If there's an update, we will be here.
Standing invite to come back and show us the next one.
Great.
There we go.
You're always the first to know.
All right. All right, we'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.